I'm John from Unqualified Gamers. Hello, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
And your reporters for this 7th episode of Season 4 of the Starling Tribune, I am Stargate Pioneer. Welcome. My friends call me SP, and with me tonight is Chris.
Trust is an orchid. Beautiful, but delicate.
And Neil.
My brother needs me. The green one.
Hey, I've heard of having money to burn, but stealing money to burn? That's new. Hey, this podcast is recorded on Thursday, November 19th, 2015. Live on the Blob streaming service! We're just a few guys that discuss the TV show Arrow. Just a little reminder that I am not a comic expert. I'm actually a sci-fi guy. I love sci-fi. But I'm reading a lot of comics and I'm catching up thanks to the great advice for folks like Chris.
I am the Emperor of comics.
All hail Emperor.
All hail Emperor Chris. Trained at the knee of one good old Palpy.
Nice.
And Neil, of course, as well.
Yeah, I loves me some comics, but I'm no emperor.
No, you're just the drug dealer, the comic dealer.
Yeah, that's right. First one's free, guys.
First taste's free.
Try some Green Arrow. You'll like it.
Yeah, you'll like it. Okay, this is a spoiler warning. Whoop, whoop, spoiler warning. During this podcast, we'll be talking about what happened in the current episode of the TV show Arrow on the CW network, as well as news articles and announcements that could, and in fact have, impact future episodes. It will contain spoilers. Consider yourself warned. And consider yourself to figure out that time travel loop that I just said. Hey, you can still catch up on all our rewatch shows in the off weeks and in our archive at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. So catch us there, Starling Tribune at Gunna Geek Network. Neil, we had a new episode last night. I watched it not once, not twice. Break it down for me, buddy.
Oh. Episode title is Brotherhood. Episode 7, Season 4, air date Wednesday, November 18th on the CW and CTV up here in Canada. Directed by the one, the only James Bam Bam Bamford. Written by Kito Shimizu and my favorite, Speed Weed. Now, we've talked a lot about this before, going into the histories of some of the key folks. James Bam Bam Bamford has been the fight choreographer for the last 3 seasons, a ton of great stunts and fight choreographing, but this was his first time behind the camera. So we're going to break that down when we discuss the episode. And of course, we've talked about Kito and Speedweed. Kito has been the executive story editor on 23 episodes so far, 26 of Being Human. He's written 10 episodes and one of The Flash now. And Speed has been co-executive producer on 23 episodes, story editor on lots and lots of NCIS and Law and Order. And yeah, we've talked about both those fine gentlemen here before.
They did an excellent job this week. It started out actually a little slow for me, but it made it up for it by the end. So it was directed by Mr. Bam Bam. So let's go straight to the fights, because that's what this is all about, right? The fights. And so what'd you think, Chris?
They're pretty intense. I especially like the elevator one. Even though it was short, it reminded me a lot of Captain America Winter Soldier and a certain episode of Community.
Yeah, so I've got it listed in the show notes as the elevator fight, but do you think it really can be labeled the elevator fight in comparison to Captain America?
Small screen elevator fight? We can qualify it.
It's a shortened version of the elevator fight, but still fun.
Chick elevator fight.
I gotta give it to Speedy, though. I mean, that was awesome.
Yeah. It was. It was all one shot, too, so I think it was actually her, because I did see her at one point before she went in, right? Did I screw that one up?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, it could have been a stunt double, could have been her. In any event, it was a long, continuous fight as they went into one shot, at least. As they went into the elevator changed floors. I don't know if they went up or down. I don't know how many floors they went, because I wasn't paying attention to the elevator panel who was. And then it went up and opened on whatever floor it was on, up or down. And then it did cut after they got out of the elevator. So it wasn't continuous after that.
So what I'm hearing is SP has homework. It's to rewatch this episode and report back to us next week whether the elevator went up or down and how many floors it was.
Not going to do it. No, no. SP's not taking that homework, buddy.
He's watched it a few times. I think he gets a pass.
I hope I get a pass on it. It was great, though. It was the most memorable event until Iron Man came down. I mean, Adam came down and injected himself in the fight.
Let's just agree to call him Iron Adam. There we go.
Iron Adam. Yeah, it's fine.
I like it.
And the courtyard fight. That was awesome with everybody out in the open there. And then our man Diggle, you know, Spartan coming in. Bam. That closing shot. Literally the closing shot.
Okay. To answer your question, Chris, I'm just going to take care of this right now so we don't have to go back to it. Starsaber underscore 222 in the chat said, up or down one floor. One had a sign that said 3, the other said 4. I forget which was first. Which, if you like Big Bang Theory, it's probably all the same floor anyway. They just quickly changed the sets in front of it.
So that's only half the homework, SP. You had to tell us whether it was up or down on top of how many floors it was.
Chris.
That is a 50%. That is what we call an engineering C.
All right, I'll take it. 2-0 and go. So yeah, the courtyard fight, but there was also the shipping container fight too, which they got their butts handed to him mostly.
Mostly Ollie did.
He got laid out.
Yeah.
Running for mayor is distracting, guys. You don't fight as well.
He's got more on his mind. Come on, give the guy a break.
Yeah, if I had Felicity on my mind, it'd probably distract me too. I'll be honest.
Wait.
Wait. Okay, I'm back. Yeah.
The Felicity moment.
We need some dream sequence music there.
See, that's why I watch the episode multiple times before we podcast is so I don't have any of those phase out Felicity moments.
No, it was cool. So I really actually like the container scene fight. I love how they're interacting with the containers. They've done it before. That also reminded me of a certain Daredevil on Netflix container fight as well. Did you notice there were a lot of fights in this episode?
Go figure with Bam Bam going at all.
Even Thea in the coffee shop or wherever they were.
Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, bam, 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 literally. She brought the pain. And you know what? As soon as the guy said, you're the kind of girl who no means yes, I'm like, man, if she's not going to hit him, I am.
Yeah, I was like, she is going to beat his expletive deleted.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. What I loved about the fights, though, and I got to give Bam Bam some credit here, totally, is there was a unique camera angle. There was a up from about knee height up as they were fighting, and you don't get that, or we haven't gotten that this season or even last season. A unique camera angle may have worked. Guys, did you notice any of the camera angles or any of the cuts? How did you feel about Bam Bam behind the camera?
I thought it was fun. It had almost like a Bourne trilogy effect to it at some points with the way the camera was doing the quick changes and the shifting angles. So I thought it was fun, and it's different than what we've had for a while.
So it's not the camera angles that I had a problem with. It was the very first fight, the motorcycle stopping in the middle of the street and then getting shot at. And motorcycles don't provide any sort of bulletproofing, right? So first of all, there's holes in motorcycles already, right? It's not one consolidated piece of metal. And second of all, they're ankle height, really. And so that's just bad tactics right there. More on Team Arrow than the directing. But aside from that, I did like the fights.
I'd throw that over to Speed and Keto. That was probably a script item, not a directing. I did like at the beginning of that fight, though, with Laurel, and I know, Chris, you loves you some Laurel.
She was all right this week.
Canary screen on top of the armored car.
How'd she get there, though? Because everybody else was behind. How did she get to the scene first?
Iron Adam.
So you're not using the speedster excuse this week. It's Iron Adam, now that we've got him.
No. Oh, come on. It's easier than that.
No, Barry can't walk yet.
No. She came from work. Everybody else came from the new Arrow cave. I see. She was just a bit closer.
So, spoilers for Flash. I did watch it, and I could say something about Chris's comment, but I'm not going to. For those of you listening to this podcast that haven't happened to catch Flash yet, and if you haven't, it was great. Go watch it.
It's not a spoiler if it's from last week.
Did you see this week's episode?
I did.
You're making me not able to argue with you right now, and it's bugging me. Because I so could, but I'm not going to. Okay. Anyway, yeah, that's a good question about Laura. How does she change into that costume then? Does she have it underneath her lawyer suit?
Yes.
In Neil's dream, yes. She's always got it up.
It folds up into a backpack.
I like it with the suit on.
No, Mad Hatter has the best answer. Zippers.
Gym bag from Cajun Sean. Regardless, I'm okay with it. If it's zippers, if it's gym bag. Let's just go with it. I'm rethinking why she keeps it on under her work clothes all day. Could you imagine how badly she would need a shower at the end of a work day?
Yeah, that wouldn't breathe very well at all.
No, Mad Hatter's also said Velcro, which also works. Yeah, as long as the Velcro doesn't pop during the fight, we're okay.
Yeah, or when you're trying to sneak around and all you hear is a as someone comes around a corner.
I think what he's saying is Velcro for the suit, not Velcro for her costume or armor or whatever you want to call it.
She Velcros on the lawyer suit on top of the suit.
Exactly. So like with Supergirl, right? If you watch Supergirl, well, it's in any of the trailers, right? When she takes off her shirt in the alleyway and she's got the Supergirl costume on underneath. I'm like, oh, those poor buttons. They never stood a chance. Boop.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I was distracted again.
So Felicity or Melissa Benoit for you, buddy.
I'll even say Laurel. Laurel was pretty awesome in this episode. You know, talking about what it means being a pro with having a sister or a sibling that's come back from the dead, trying to talk some sense into our man Dig. This week, and Chris, we'll throw it to you on this one. On a scale of 1 to 10 for Laurel, knowing that you always skew to the lower end, rate Laurel.
So I'd actually give her a 7 or 8. She was actually pretty likable this week. For once, it wasn't all about Laurel. Like, she felt bad for Daigle and she wanted to help him out. And I was like, that's great. That's why you need to do things like that to make me like this character. Because all before, it's been like, you don't understand what it's like. My sister died, blah, 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 blah. And she sort of said something to that effect, but flipped it on its head this time. That she understands because it happened to her, too.
Laurel was great this episode. I got to give it to Laurel.
I do have one point, though. I think a lot of those conversations should be had with Lila and not Laurel.
He should be talking to his wife about it more, let's be honest, and not his friend's ex, but she does have unique perspective.
And she is a friend. They are a team. So, okay, I get that. But I see Lila being pushed off to the side more and more. We actually got a scene with her this time, which was great, versus not having a scene with her before. So I did appreciate that, but there just needs to be more Lila in the show, especially at the charitable ball. Lila should have been there.
I agree with you, but I'm glad they used it this way to use Laurel to be the one to try and reach out to Dick. Because like I said, that character needed it.
Fair enough.
Redeem the character. They know a lot of people are not big Laurel fans. So if you do things like that that make the character likable and someone you can relate to, it's smart.
Yeah, they do have to turn that boat around for where the comics are going to go. They just have to do it. And season 2 was not good for Laurel. Not.
Neither was season 3 or season 1.
But I enjoyed her in season 3, and season 1 was passable.
Hey now, be nice, Chris. Come on. She's on the road to redemption here.
Didn't we have the same conversation like earlier on this season? And then she turned around again and became inherently selfish. It's all about my sister. She's been dead. We have to save her, and doesn't think about it. Never mind.
What is the theme of this episode? The theme of this episode is forgiveness and the benefit of the doubt. So I'm embracing episode 7, Brotherhood, and I'm giving Laurel the benefit of the doubt. She isn't an Afghani drug lord.
I was too. I just said something nice about her, and then I had to go back and remind everyone why I didn't before.
Steven, I don't even know where to go with that. So for those of you listening to the audio or the video later and are without the chat, the network owner, Steven Jondrew, my co-host on a couple other podcasts, said, SP, you should understand the best. After all, you're the Laurel of this podcast, right?
Wow.
So does that make Steven the Malcolm of the audience who just stirs the stuff up and runs?
Yeah, and that also means that he's going to go naked on podcasts soon, because that's what John Barrowman does. He just strips off at panels.
Soon. He does that all the time.
Yeah. Hey, while we're speaking of Barrowman, let's talk about Papa Merlin coming back and offering up a nice neighborhood pedophile for Thea. Here, just kill this guy.
I'm so happy Papa Merlin's back.
All right, I got a new theory, by the way, on the campaign manager. He's not being sent by Damian. He was sent by Malcolm to take care of Thea.
I come on board with that idea, especially based off of, we'll get to it later, the Damian and Oliver interactions. Doesn't seem like Damian really has much of an eye inside the campaign based on that.
You know what? I'm actually going to change my prediction on this one. I'm going to predict that the campaign manager is a campaign manager.
He's just a Jessica Danforth, huh?
The anti-conspiracy theory.
No. There's a level deep here. There has to be. He's in too many episodes. There has to be something else to him. He turns into somebody for Legends of Tomorrow or something.
No. I know who he is. He's Zoom.
We still don't know who Zoom is.
He's not Zoom.
I could be Zoom.
You're not Zoom. I'm just making the call right now. Statistically, you're not Zoom. I know where you are on Wednesday nights.
I bet $1,000 that SP is not Zoom.
It's not Wednesday nights. It's Tuesday nights.
Oh, it's Tuesday. That's true.
See?
But hang on. You'd be watching yourself. You'd be in two places at the same time.
Time travel.
All that speedstering, you can be in multiple places at once. Barry did it this season.
Oh, hang on. The Earth 2 SP is Zoom. The Earth 1 SP is podcasting.
Ooh. I was just going to say, multiple universes, you never know. Doesn't have to be Earth 2. Could be Earth 52. I don't care. Don't care. As long as I'm not where Grodd is. Because, oh my gosh, he was pissed. Yeah. How about back to Arrow?
Okay, let's talk about Thea, because she had the restaurant fight. She was dealing with Papa Merlin. And the first thing that struck me is, for somebody who has murdering tendencies, why does her costume include a sword? That's not what you give somebody fighting not to murder people. That's not a friendly weapon to go out and police the streets
with. It's self-protection. It's what she's trained with. She hasn't trained with anything else, so she needs something like that.
It's a freaking sword.
She's had it for a while, I think. We just haven't seen her use it lately.
True. It just doesn't strike me as a let's be nice and protect people of the city weapon. I get it. I love swords. Big
sword
guy. You
don't know. It could be made of dragon glass, and there could be walkers coming by. She might need it. Yes, I did completely cross the streams on that one.
Wow.
My head hurts.
Yeah. Geeks.live.
Here you go, folks. That's podcast gold right here.
Yep. Okay, so talking about Thea still, how about her confrontation with Damien in the hallway when he's doing some magic and moving around her? Yeah, SP, you got some
I
thoughts.
I do, and we had a listener in the chat, Theta VJ, who was saying, how about that? So, yeah, that was awesome. Damien was going to kill her, plain and simple. He was going to do something really bad, and he couldn't. He's like, this usually works, and of course it's not. It's like Loki with the stick against Iron Man, you know?
I thought the exact same thing. It was like Loki's pokey stick.
I don't know if the bloodlust was entering him, or he was siphoning it off from her, or if it was bad magic or good magic, whatever, that was combating with whatever. It was cool. I liked it.
I think it's got something to do with the fact the magics he uses to presumably lengthen his life, because remember, he's a compatriot of Ra's al Ghul's, the dead one, and to give him his powers conflicts with something from the Lazarus Pit. They don't mesh well. So I would think that Sarah and Thea would be kind of immune to some of the worse aspects of his powers.
Yeah, it's kind of like in some mythologies, when a vampire tries feeding off the dead, it's poisonous to them. Again, Starsaber222, Adam in the chat, was saying it looked like whatever he was doing reversed on him. That's kind of the feeling I had too, like he's trying to siphon dark energy or death essence or something that she brought back from the pit, and it wasn't working.
But we were wondering what was going to help her, right? Was Constantine going to help her? Was Damien going to help her? Because something's going to have to help her. She can't continue on like this. Either she's going to die or she's going to get fixed. This is how she's going to get fixed.
Mm-hmm. But what's the cost going to end up being? You dabble in magics.
Lance.
It's always difficult.
Quentin Lance, there's always that's a cost.
Yeah.
Just got to sacrifice him.
Yeah. Going back to that scene, though, Willa Holland nailed like the look of terror on her face when Damien Dark's got his hand around her throat, basically. I was like, woo, really well done.
I mean, if Neil McDonough had me like that, I'd be like, oh, okay, I surrender.
I'm sorry, dumb.
It was a great scene. First, with Neil McDonough teleporting, bamfing around that hallway on her like that, and basically calling that he knows her fighting style, that she was trained by Ra's al Ghul and the League of Assassins.
But how is Malcolm?
Yes.
That was awesome. He knows exactly what's going on.
In this particular case, he doesn't know what's going on inside the campaign, as you stated before, though.
That's true. But he does know that Malcolm is Ra's al Ghul now.
True. That would be important to know for somebody that's being hunted by the League.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think Hive probably knows what's going on in the various evil leagues of evil around the world, so that would make sense. Because Hive is just, it's more than just Damien, as we saw when that person came from out of town and then promptly got killed.
Yeah, but right. Damien's got some things going on, right? He's trying to starve the city of money. He's trying to create an operating base. He's trying to get in with the campaign. And now, by the way, he's going to inject an opponent into the campaign.
So who do we think it is? Is it someone we've met before or someone new?
Deathstroke.
He's going to free Slade Wilson.
Yeah, there may be some violent opposition to that.
So I think it'll end up being someone new, but I see in the chat room we have a couple answers.
7 of 9?
Yeah, I like that one. Jerry Ryan's coming back, and then Starsaber seems to think it will be Damien Dark, actually. I don't see it being Damien.
Could be.
You don't?
I know, but in this particular case, he could go front and center.
He likes to be the puppet master more, I think. What, just be like the ultimate F you to Ollie? Be like, I'm going to come out here and do it myself?
You know what? He likes his puppets. Let's be honest.
See, that's what I think too.
I don't think we've seen whoever he's going to put there. Or he'll just continue to work behind the scenes to bring Ollie down. So.
Could be the campaign manager.
There you go.
Why do you want to advise when you could rule?
There's no NDA for that. You could go in.
Non-compete. Exactly.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. And he knows all the strategies. Oh, we should be the writers.
And again, CW or WB, Warner Brothers, whoever controls the writing staff on Arrow, these two gentlemen are available. That's at Roundtable Nerds and at Neil Isn't Witty. Matter of fact, at Neil Isn't Witty actually lives in the town where it's shot. So he can just walk on down and give some set advice and then go to work. It's that simple.
Yep. I'd be okay with that. Just give me a writing credit and I'm good. It'll be Keto, Speedweed, and Neil Isn't Witty.
All right. So Diggle. Diggle's a little conflicted. We talked about it a little bit before with his relationship with Ollie, but man, he's going through some stuff. And are we going to see the nephew again, you think? Or is it just a name drop in passing?
I think it's just a name drop, call back to earlier stuff from season one. Because they don't want you to remember the fact that Dig kind of had an awkward romance almost start up with his dead brother's wife.
Awkward.
Remember, it's a CW show.
It wasn't that awkward. It was progressing well, and then it suddenly disappeared. It's like, poof.
After the, the city quake? What was that called? Big season one plot device. The Undertaking. Thank you.
The Undertaking, yes. I wanted to say The Undertaker, and I was like, that's not right.
After The Undertaking, it just ceased to exist. So there you go. So Ray's back. He's not dead yet. Not dead. And he's figuring out what he wants to do when he grows up.
Yeah, he's being a bit of a prima donna. He's like, oh, I don't want to go back to work. I want to figure it out. I haven't built anything that's lasted or anything. Oh, screw you, Ray. Go back to work. Man up. Put your big boy pants on.
He had his Tony Stark moment where everything he thought he knew shifted around him because of his own action. I mean, he's just kind of having the reverse of what Tony did. Tony decided to take that to become the hero all the time, and Ray's become more introspective.
Trying to figure out what he's going to do, because he's got his company he's got to save. He's got a city he's got to save. He's got to figure out how to get small again and how to get big again.
Well, I mean, he's got to find his place in everything again. I mean, everything kind of moved on without him. Now, did it move on well without him? That's another story. But he saw himself as having a legacy before, as like what he would do would last, and it's sort of not.
I mean, having a city named kind of after him, that's cool. Did say that, but I mean, that's not a small thing. That's a big thing.
All right. You know what? He gets one more episode of feeling sorry for himself, and then that's it.
Well, you might only have one or two more episodes before he's on Legends Tomorrow. I mean, this is all set up for him to go find himself in Central City for that spinoff.
Yeah, we know that. But realistically, I want to just grab him and slap, slap, slap. Man up. Go back to work. Stop feeling sorry for yourselves. And if whatever you built didn't last time, build something better. That's what you do. You're an inventor. Build something.
You know he's going to come back and help Curtis do the T-spheres. You know that's where this is all going.
And that's where I hope it's going. Yeah. Curtis could figure that out by himself because he's a pretty smart guy.
He is. He's a great athlete. And he's tall.
And he wasn't in this episode.
He was decompressing after all those energy drinks he had two episodes ago.
There you go. He needed a break. Otherwise, his heart was going to give out because of all the caffeine.
Yeah, he's decaffeinating this week.
He's in detox. Caffeine detox.
I got two questions for you guys on this episode that are unanswered for me. First of all, what is G6:5? And what are the yellow pills? Is that the fish oil pills from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Ooh.
Yes. They're going to become inhumans.
Well, they're going to become ghosts. That's close
enough.
And
then Director Coulson's going to bring in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to help take care of things.
That would be so cool.
We'll have that elusive Director Coulson and Oliver Queen meeting we've all wanted for so long.
Somebody should film that at a con.
That would be awesome. Back-to-back panels? That would be awesome, having them meet in the hallway. Director, Mayor.
I just want to have Phil Coulson walk up to Oliver Queen and be like, Mr. Queen, I'm here to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative.
Or Mr. Amell.
It would make no sense, and fanboys would melt down.
You don't even have to go Mr. Queen, just Mr. Amell. That would be fine. All right. Gentlemen, what else do you have for the episode? I'm kind of out. Chris?
Andy Diggle, do we think he actually did all those things or not?
Yes, but was he Andy or was he a ghost?
That's what I was going to get at also. And hats off to David Ramsey. He rocked it this episode too.
Okay, I've got one scene with him that was like, huh? So when he unmasks Andy, right? And he figures out it's Andy. He's like, Andy. And then Andy gets up and runs away. And he's sitting there on the ground. He's like, oh. He's a combat veteran. Nobody in their right mind in a combat situation is going to take off their helmet just because they see something that they don't believe. You keep that sucker on.
But SP, it's more powerful on camera to see him be affected that way. It wasn't a logical thing. It was for the audience.
But again, if you're a combat veteran, you keep that cap on because you never know when somebody's going to try to ding you.
I agree. But considering the cap only covers like the front of his face, he can still get shot in the back of the head anyways. I mean,
or the side of the head, or
yeah, or the side of the head. As long as it's from here up, he's good.
All right.
And not on the plexiglass either. All right. And there was some chat in the chat room earlier about how annoying Diggle's face mask is, or Spartan. I am still enamored with it. Yes, I wish it covered his whole head, but I'm loving me some Spartans. So let's see more of it. Let's see the heads up display.
Yeah, I'm on the same boat as you, Neil. I like the look of it. I just wish it covered the whole head because it just seems kind of stupid to only cover part of it.
Yep. So I watched episode one, season one of Spartacus today. Just throwing that out there. Full helmet, Manu Bennett, you know, let's go. Let's do it.
Nice.
All right. Is that it for the episode? Do we have anything else? Thoughts for the big crossover?
No,
I can't think of anything. It's going to be fun.
Man, that trailer at the end of the episode was great for the crossover.
It was the same trailer they had at the end of Flash 2. They didn't change it. Just get ready on Tuesday, the 1st of December. A whole team's in, and you have Hawkman and Hawkgirl involved as well. So it's going to be great.
And I was happy to see Malcolm in that trailer. That was cool to me because I fully admit I'm a John Barrowman fanboy. So anytime he's on screen or on the show, I'm very happy to see it. I see Steven didn't get it on CTV. So Steven, check YouTube. Go to CW Television. I'm sure it's over there.
It is all over the interwebs right now, guys. So, yeah. And it'll probably be in our show notes.
So, I was thinking, is the Thea thing going to be wrapped up at the mid-season finale here with her bloodlust? Or is that going to traipse on into the second half of the season?
I think it traipses on. I think it'll actually be an element of Legends Tomorrow. Sarah dealing with the bloodlust. And between the two of them, they'll find a way to cure it, be it via Damian Dark or somehow found by traveling through time and finding some magic cure-all.
Earlier in the chat, Steven brought up that his great idea is that Sarah and Thea's bloodlust are what combines to defeat Damian.
It's true. And Damian's going to be in an episode of Legends, so that could tie in that way.
Yeah. You know what? I actually think they're going to ignore it because they've got more big story arcs to tell in Legends. I think in the crossover, at least, they're not going to touch the bloodlust. They might touch it later on, but not in the crossover.
I don't know that you can not touch it in Legends because of the fact that one of Sarah's defining traits since the resurrection is she's out of control. She can't fight because she loses it.
Because she goes to Central City to go hang with Mom.
I don't know. Maybe a white costume means you lose your bloodlust.
Yeah. Lots of yoga. Yeah.
Also, Cage and Sean want us to bring up, we didn't talk much on it, Damian and Oliver's meeting at the police function.
Yeah, that was interesting because you knew both knew more than they were letting on. Although I don't think Damian knows that Oliver is the Green Arrow yet. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Because he has his suspicions, but doesn't know for sure.
And I got to say, lots of respect for Ollie of really getting concerned when he thought Lance was in danger and that Damian knows what's going on there. First thing he said is, you're in danger, and he's like about to try to pull him out of there, and you know, props to our boy Lance. He's like, no, I know what I'm doing. I'm a big boy.
All right, so he goes in. Damian tells him, I don't trust you, and here's why. Because you set up the meeting just so you could follow me back, and then he just leaves. He knows he's going to have this conversation. He just leaves that address on his desk. Who thought that was a setup?
I did.
Totally. They were looking for him.
Well, I mean, it's more to set up making us think Malcolm's going to be the one that dies, whose headstone we see
Malcolm
at the very beginning of the season.
Malcolm?
Sorry, brain fart.
You just killed off your favorite character.
It's like, whoa, well, that came out of left field.
Wrong messed up dad, sorry.
Nice. And this is something we didn't talk about is how is Mayor Ollie developing? And I think Mayor Ollie nailed the scene at the cop banquet. He nailed the speech at the docks, you know, with his decision to gentrify and rejuvenate the harbor section. So, yeah, I think Ollie is shaping up to be a decent Mayor Ollie.
So, do you think Oliver made the right choice in opposing Damian in the open and not trying to work from within like he did the League of Assassins?
Yes, but it's just not going to work.
That's about the same thought I had, too.
Let's be honest, the rest of the team would have killed him if he went, no, trust me, I got this great plan. I'm going to pretend to join him. Then I'm going to pretend to turn off all of you again, and then I'm going to surprise right at the end. No.
This version of Oliver Queen can't do that, because the way he's progressed and become all about friends and family more so, and realizing they can fight on their own, is a step back if he'd gone and done that. So I was glad they didn't make it happen. I didn't expect it to, but at the same time, part of me is going, oh no, not this again. One last thing. How long do you think it takes to get more answers out of Andy or figure out the rest of his story and get him out of a cage?
Oh, he'll get out of the cage. He's implanted with a tracking device.
Ooh, so they're going to lose another arrow cave?
Go to Lair 6.0 now. Not again. This time it'll be at the bottom of Queen Mansion. Oh,
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, there's for your bat checklist.
Ting, ting. And talking about the bat checklist, we don't do the bat checklist anymore, but we do episode DC Easter eggs. So, Neil, why don't you take this?
Great. We also like to refer to an article by comicbook.com. You'll find it in the show notes, where they kind of break some of them down. Some of them are really obvious, and some of them are more niche. So, yeah, we're cheating a bit. The first Easter egg is Wolfman Biologics. Marv Wolfman is a classic DC writer responsible for the Crisis on Infinite Earths. And of course, yeah, Wolfman Biologics was where the yellow pills and yellow liquids came from. Marv Wolfman's also worked on Teen Titans, Adventures of Superman, and a lot of other DC stuff. So a nice little Easter egg there.
Chris, do you have another one?
Next one we have could be a coincidence. There's a character referenced by the name of Lawrence Tanner. He was an employee of LexCorp and killed off in a 1998 series of Legends of the DC Universe. It's kind of obscure, but it could be a shout-out.
Probably is.
The next one's kind of one of those in-your-face things. We've talked about it before. One of the characters, or one of the DC writers that is responsible for rebooting a lot of the interest in Green Arrow, is Andy Diggle. And the character of John Diggle was an homage to Andy Diggle. Now we have Andy Diggle himself. And in case you're wondering what Andy Diggle is most famous for having written...
There you go.
Green Arrow, Year One, the retelling and the modern updating of the Green Arrow origin story.
Hey, Chris, have you read that recently?
I haven't read it recently.
Neil, have you actually read it recently, or do you just have it laying around?
I haven't read it recently, but it's with the rest of my Green Arrow graphic novels.
You know what? I've never read it. Why don't we read through that next week, get together and talk about it?
Works for me.
Yeah, it's a great idea, because we do have a week off from new episodes next week. Great idea, SP.
Awesome. Good plan. I like it.
So listeners, we'll be reviewing and talking about Green Arrow Year One next week and its influence on the show and some of the story threads that we've seen throughout seasons 1 through 4.
Sweet. Okay, what's the next one we got?
Nice. And if you guys didn't realize, 52 is a big deal in the DC universe. That number pops up everywhere. They had the whole new 52 initiative when they relaunched everything. So we got another couple instances of let's beat you over the head with 52 this week. The address at the docks, 52. During Oliver's press event at the end, a News 52 mic flag.
I might need to get one of those News 52 mic flags.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing.
Nice. Got to figure out how to get one of those. I'm going to take the next couple of Easter eggs because they're pretty quick. We've talked about Lila Michaels before. It was great to see her back in this episode. But Lila Michaels is a character in the DC Universe, Harbinger, who's always around when there's a crisis about to kick off. But the more fun one was when Damian was sparring with Speedy, and he called her Merida. So if you're a fan of animated shows from Brave, Merida is the princess with the flaming red hair and a bow from Brave. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
It was. I'm just looking at the picture. Nice. Okay.
Yeah, it works quite well.
Is that it for the week? Does anybody else have in the chat maybe any Easter eggs that we missed?
And it's really only Neil McDonough that get away with saying that, since he's in the MCU and part of Disney family. They can't come out back.
Exactly. There was one other Easter egg that didn't make it in. So if you follow Bam Bam on Twitter, he had a bunch of set photos that were actually cut from the final edit. And one of them was Damian Dark standing in front of a picture that said Bam Squared Muay Thai. So a boxing gym. And that didn't make it in. Bam Squared, of course, would be Bam Bam. So
nice.
If you really want to make that switch to Disney, by the way, I just have to get something out of my mind before it stays in there forever. I was watching Disney XD, watching Star Wars Rebels, which is awesome, by the way. So if you haven't seen that, go watch it. And I'm watching this commercial for a little girl with a microphone in a little blue type microphone and a little doll. And she's singing back and forth with Elsa, and she would stop and Elsa would start and Elsa would stop and she would start. I'm like, oh, that would be so annoying.
I'm going to give you a little blab high five for that one.
So we are going to move on to some news now, and we have several stories going on right now, one of which is the crossover episodes. 2 weeks, we will not have a new episode next week, but in 2 weeks, we will have not one, but two new episodes, and talks, by the way, are underway with Crimson Comet on how we want to handle it. So just stay tuned for that. Okay.
Ooh.
And just the first piece of news, and I think everybody's aware of this now, that unlike last year's Arrow and Flash crossover episodes, where it was an Arrow of Flash with, or sorry, an episode of Flash with some Arrow on it, and then an episode of Arrow with some Flash on it, it's going to be one two-part episode, fully integrated, basically introducing and bridging to Legends of Tomorrow. A pretty interesting way to do a crossover episode.
I love how they're pulling this together between the three shows. I would say four shows with Supergirl and five shows with Constantine, but not really the one with Supergirl, and Constantine doesn't exist anymore. So anyway, you were loving it during the episode, so don't say that.
Who are you guys talking about? I had to repress it because I'm so sad.
You need to take this next story because you're closest to actually having the vaunted goatee.
Okay, so I don't know if you guys had heard at one point in time, everyone kept asking Stephen Amell, are you ever going to grow the Oliver Queen goatee? And in July of 2015, he said, 100% no, never. Our show could go 14 seasons and a goatee will never happen. Hope that clears things up forever. So fast forward a few months later, November 17th, Stephen Amell goes on Twitter again. One, went on a tongue-in-cheek tirade earlier this year about Green Arrow iconography and how it fit into our show. Two, proud to say it only took three-ish months to make myself look like a total idiot. Three, the point being, you want to avoid the term, quote, that will never happen, end quote, under any and all circumstances.
I could envision this. Wendy Miracle at her desk one night going, oh no, oh no. Writers, Arrow writers room. Yeah, put him in the goatee.
Writers, assemble!
He doomed himself. I'm sure that's what happened.
Yeah, he did.
And so there's a theory that a lot of fans have that Katie Lotz this week had tweeted something about time travel and a special guest star in Legends, that maybe we're getting an Oliver Queen from a different Earth that has this goatee. The specific tweet that she'd sent out said, on set filming one of the coolest scenes we've shot thus far, hashtag time travel, hashtag guest star.
Robert Queen, which I don't remember the actor's name, unfortunately. This is bad, but I don't remember him. He's been in a couple of scenes, first season mostly, but I'm wondering if he's kept in shape because now he's going to be the Green Arrow in Earth 2. So
I'm not sure.
See, that's it. Like Mark Hamill, because Mark Hamill was, you know, totally not in shape for Star Wars. And as soon as Disney got it, they must have got a hold of him and said, hey, Mark, by the way, might want to lose a little weight, buddy. And he did. Although we still don't know what he's going to look like in Star Wars. Keep going back to Star Wars because I want to make Chris happy. All right. So fan theories, what do we got?
Well, there was a one that cropped up last week. So remember when Damian Dark last week was taking a look at those boxes or those squares laid out on a table? Nobody knew what he was looking at. We all figure it's something mystical. There's a fan theory that's popped up that says that could be a mother box or a father box. Ooh. So if you're not familiar with DC's cosmic universe, which really hasn't gotten as much play as the Marvel cosmic, there's a bunch of realms ruled by, on one side, the evil ones, dark side, and then kind of on the other side of the spectrum, the new gods. And these are intergalactic communication devices and teleporters that open up boom tubes. So this could have been a mother box or a father box. Pretty cool fan theory. Let's see if it plays out.
I think Adam thought it was a cool fan theory too.
He did.
Okay, so the last news story we have is a description for the next episode, right? Dark Waters or
ninth episode, two episodes from now.
The mid-season finale, right?
Definitely. So again, after this city's attack, Stephen Amell makes a bold move against Hive. Malcolm checks in on Thea and leaves her with a warning, and things take a horrible turn when Damian Dark retaliates in a brutal manner at Oliver's mayoral holiday party. Ooh, we get another Christmas party for the Queens. I miss that.
Yes! Yes! I do too. I love that first season. It was like the family picture with Walter and Thea and all. I'm like, aw. And you could have everybody there but Moira.
You know how to translate this preview for that episode? Rest in peace, Quentin Lance. He gonna die in a brutal manner, I wager.
Somebody from the Christmas portrait has to die every year, yeah. And for the record, I was not the biggest Moira fan, never was, and yes, it sucks for the kids to have their mom go bye-bye, but she wasn't exactly a great person to have on the show.
Tell it to Bruce Wayne, he survived.
My parents are dead.
My parents are dead.
Hey guys, we have some cast and crew interviews. You just want to say what they are and they'll be in the show notes?
Let's do that.
Great. So we've got Mark Guggenheim talking about the crossover. He went to YouTube and he talked all about that. So definitely check that out.
Next, Stephen Amell was on IGN. He talked a lot about Legends of Tomorrow and the fate of Arrow and what's going on. So if you're a Stephen Amell fan, like most of us are, you might want to check it out.
And Charlotte Ross, and we missed this one last week because it probably came out as we were recording. She did an interview with Comic Book Resources to say that Smoke and Lance is definitely happening. We saw it all live, not live, but on the show last week. But she said it's going to be a thing going forward. So I defy your Lance is dying theory because we need more Smoke and Lance.
I hope I'm wrong.
Yes, we do need more Smoke and Lance. And that would be awesome. You know what would be more awesome is if the X comes into town too. Well, not for that. I led that wrong.
Awkward.
I just meant that I love seeing her on the screen. I miss her. Ever since ER, she was great. Of course, I'm talking about Alex Kingston. But so we have one last one.
That's right. Last one's with Katrina Law. She did an interview with comicbook.com talking about Nyssa in season 4.
We do. She was awesome. Like in the two episodes she was in, that was like, oh, man.
We want more Nyssa.
Oh,
make it happen. Make it happen.
Was she just in 2 or 3?
2, I think. Nyssa's a straight up bad.
And again, Arrow writers, if you are somehow listening to Starling Tribune, please, please, please give us a season 4 episode with all the great female characters in them. Like an updated Birds of Prey with both Canaries, with Nyssa, you know, just do it now. Speedy on that team, bring the Huntress back. Ah, that'd be awesome.
Like in early May, maybe, when the sweeps month starts. And I know that we really don't do that anymore, but okay, so for those of you that need a little schooling on ratings, the cost for advertising used to be set by 3 weeks during the year, and it was sweeps week. They expanded that to sweeps month, but they kept it in the month that the weeks were at. It was October, it was February, and it was May, and that's when you had all your big episodes, right? And so that's the big months for ratings. So at the beginning of May is when you start that final push towards the end, because the shows end before Memorial Day here in the United States. And that would be awesome. A beginning May episode with.
And Cajun Sean in the chat said, add Katana to that. And again, Felicity is the overlord in the background coordinating it all.
You mean the Oracle?
That would be one heck of an episode.
She is the overlord.
Let's call her the overlord. She is your overlord.
I bow to my overlord. Yes, absolutely. All right. So it's coming up on Christmas time. Do we happen to have any new Green Arrow toys or comics coming up?
Well, there's two things, and we've got one in the show notes, but more importantly, Felicity herself took to Instagram this morning and tweeted pictures of the new Felicity Funko Pop, the pre-release packaging. So it's coming. It should be out. It sounds like people are saying January, which would suck because it wouldn't be out in time for Christmas. But if you're a fan of the Funko Pops and you need your Felicity Funko, have no fear. It's in the works. The other thing that came out this week is if you're a fan of the new 52 Green Arrow, then Volume 7 of the graphic novels came out this week, which collects the final run up until the, I was going to say Convergence, but that's...
Neil reads way too many comics, but we love him for it.
So to the big DC event that happened this year, which effectively got rid of the new 52 and basically gave us the all new DC universe. The great thing about Volume 7 is this is the graphic novel that has Diggle and Felicity introduced into the new 52 storyline. So they're brought into the main continuity. And again, they're wiped out from that continuity with the rebooted DC universe. And the episode that takes place, or the issues that take place primarily in Seattle against a villain called the King, lets us bring in Green Lantern and Katana and a whole bunch of other characters. So it's a bit of a mini Justice League, Batman working in the background as well. It's worth it. So if you're a fan of New 52, Arrow or Green Arrow Volume 7, the graphic novel, landed both on Comixology and your local comic book stores this week.
I am a Green Lantern fan, by the way, so I would love to see him back. That'd be awesome. Anything else, guys? Anything else in the stores that you saw or whatever? I actually went to GameStop, and I saw GameStop is now have all the Pop Funkos out and everything. Saw all the Star Wars ones, but I did see stuff from Arrow, too, so I was please. It was a whole wall. It, you know how they make the aisle or whatever? In this particular case, the aisle was made of Pop Funko. So if you like took one from the bottom, the whole thing was going to fall down. I'm like, why? Why? Okay. Anyway, it was pretty cool. I like that. All right. You guys ready for some feedback?
Yeah, let's go into that.
Bring it on.
We got a voicemail from Adam. I'm going to play it.
Hey guys, this is Adam calling in with feedback for this week's episode of Arrow. So I'm kind of surprised that Oliver was more interested in saving Andy than Dig was, but I guess he got hit pretty hard by the paperwork that Quentin gave him. The fight scenes were good as usual. Adam coming out of nowhere was pretty entertaining, though the effects on his flight didn't seem all that good compared. Of course, I'd be comparing it to Grodd on The Flash this week, so yeah, not exactly a fair comparison. And I'm sure they're saving up some money for the crossover in 2 weeks. And now on to some of the other plots. Vlad being the brother of the lady that Oliver says he killed but hadn't is kind of too big of a coincidence, but we'll see how that plays out later. Unlikable of a character as he is, I hope Conklin is still around because, well, I like that actor and he deserves a paycheck. Thea being at least temporarily cured of her bloodlust by Damian Dark using his wraith trick on her was an interesting twist. I thought it might just not have worked on her because of her having been in the Lazarus pit, though he already could tell there was a connection with Ra's, or he even knew that Merlin was Ra's al Ghul now, so he clearly has some informants within the League. Can't wait to see what happens there, and can't wait to hear what you guys think. Talk to you later. Bye.
Maybe Nissa's the informant. Ooh.
Ooh, I don't know about that, but that's an interesting theory.
She's locked up, so it'd be difficult, but she could get word out to those loyal to her.
But it is her father's worst enemy.
Yeah, and I don't know if she would turn her back that much on her dad. So, but I'm betting Adam's right. I'm betting there's somebody in the League.
Yeah, it's possible.
It's Hive. They got people everywhere.
Well, thank you very much, Adam, for the voicemail. We really appreciate it. You can keep them coming anytime. And you guys have anything else to say about it?
Solid episode. I can't wait to see what happens in 2 weeks.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So if you are listening to Starling Tribune and you're like, man, I really like this podcast. I want more like it. Well, fortunately, we actually have a plethora. We have a gaggle, a Google, whatever you want to call, of podcasts over on the Gunna Geek Network. And Chris, why don't you tell us about one of them?
You said Google, they're going to sue us.
That's free advertising. They won't.
Yeah. So let's talk about another podcast. It's called In Defense Of, episode 11, excuse me. It's called Growing Your Own Geeks. And the crew is going to take a look at the developmental and possibly societal advantages of raising one's kid in a geek household.
If you guys listen to the In Defense Of podcast, they're awesome. It's a little bit more in depth. It's a little bit more, I won't call them NPR-ish, but it's definitely a more introspective. It's more like a documentary on a topic in depth. And if you like geeking out about stuff, this is deep geeking and it is great stuff. It's on the Gunna Geek Network again, In Defense Of. And I'm just going to mention a couple of other two quick podcasts right now. Chris has started a solo podcast, Nerd Alert News, right, sir?
That's correct.
Okay, so go check that out. It comes out 1 to 3 times a week, right? Short 15, 20 minutes?
15 to 20 minutes is the target.
And Neil has started a new podcast called Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. Long Box Edition. So basically all the stuff that he reads, that Adam reads, and that Lauren reads on the Marvel Universe, you can go quick get that in 10 to 15 minutes every week. Comes out Wednesday late at night. So Thursday morning you wake up, it's there. So go check that out. So lots of great stuff on the Goody Geek Network. Just go check it out. All right. Next week, we're going to come back with year one, right?
That's correct.
Again, it'll be U.S. Thanksgiving, November 25th, a Thursday night, live on the Blab streaming service. We're talking Green Arrow Year One by Andy Diggle, which is somehow very appropriate for this part in the season, and its influence on Arrow to date.
It is. And then in 2 weeks, we'll be back with We're going to have to figure out what we're going to do with Crimson Comet. There's been talk of a crossover, so we'll just have to see how that goes. But the episode name is?
Legends of Yesterday. So I'm betting we have Legends of Tomorrow on the first day, Legends of Yesterday. There may be some time travel.
Just that title alone, it's like Yesterday's Enterprise. It's like, oh, that was such a good idea. So it's like I equate it. I'm like, I'm so looking forward to that. It's awesome. All right. So We will be here Thanksgiving night. We will be stuffed. We might be a little sleepy, but we'll be jazzed talking about Green Arrow year one. And I just want to say thank you to all our listeners, all our viewers. You guys really make us go. We wouldn't do this without you. We do like geeking out about it, but we wouldn't actually produce it in a podcast or a video cast. So thank you very much for catching us on Spreaker, the replay on YouTube. And I just want to say a special thanks. Again, it's been a while since I did this, to our editors. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, I might produce this, but I don't edit it. Chris actually edits the video. Thank you very much, sir. And then Heather edits the audio, and she does such a phenomenal job. You wouldn't get Starling Tribune without them. So go ahead, hit them both up and say thank you, because this is podcast is here because they do it. Okay.
Great. And I want to thank all the live participants in our Blab chat room. You've heard us talk a lot about the people that are giving us comments and questions and feedback in the chat. It's the hive mind in action. So again, thank you to your listeners at Cajun Sean, at Jenny Stiven, at Mad Hatter 0221, at Starsaber underscore 222, and at Stephen John Drew. Thank you all.
Mind. Did you do that on purpose?
I did do that on purpose.
Did you get Theta underscore VJ?
If you would like to join us live on the Blab streaming service, you can join us live on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on blab.im and search for Starling Tribune or Stargate Pioneer, and you'll find us.
Absolutely. And now they're allowing the actual podcast logo to show up as well. So you get not my picture, but the podcast logo. So that's great. And don't forget, go on iTunes, subscribe, review, and rate. We would love a 5-star review on iTunes. We really would. It makes the searchability so much better. Really driving that into the new year. So if you could help us out with that, that'd be great. And then don't forget to like us on Facebook, like the episodes as they come up on YouTube, subscribe to the Gonna Geek YouTube channel, because that's where this is all at. And then like the episodes when they come out. We really would appreciate that, because that'll just heighten more people to come in and do, say funny things for voicemails or chats or whatever. We really appreciate it. And don't forget, badger us on Twitter. Neil and Chris and I and Wing and Jay, we all have access to the Starling Tribune Twitter account. So hit us up there. We all see it. You might hear from one or all of us. So we really appreciate your interaction there.
And don't forget, you can find all our contact information on the Gonna Geek Network over at GonnaGeekNetwork.com. While you're there, check out the forums, check out all the other great shows that are part of the network. If you want to share your thoughts with us, head on over to our Facebook page, send in a tweet, or give us a call at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283.
Guys, I think it's fair. Oh, go ahead, SP.
Don't forget, after the credits, we will take the Starling Tribune logo down and we will open up the four seat, and you are welcome to join us.
Do it. Guys, I think it's fair to say this was another great episode, and I think Bam Bam lived up to his moniker on his directorial debut. I think that about wraps it up for another week. Any last words as we sign it off and open it up to our listeners on the Blab Network? At Roundtable Nerds.
Brother.
At Stargate Pioneer.
Elevator.
And I am at Neil Isn't Witty, signing off with Diggle. This has been...
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.
All right, let's see. You're a host. You're a host.
Thank you, sir.
And you're a host.
Everyone's a host, darling.
Everybody's hosting. If you go to geeks.live.
You're a geek.live.
You were the first one to use geeks.live, whether you knew it or not. Yeah.
We all wish we were geeks.live.
We all are geeks.live.
Oh, my God.
Do, 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 do. this instant blab thing. There's no green room here, so.
You get to see how the sausage is made.
And it is a sausage fest, so
yeah.
Go ahead, make your jokes there.
Now I want now I want some sausage.
All right.
Who's now got I sausage?
Green M&Ms, actually.
Ooh. Oh, there's just something about the green ones.
Yeah.
All right. So, Neil, I don't like you.
Yeah, I got to run, so I'm going to leave you.
But the seats are open, and thank you very much, sir, and we will see you next week.
Guys,
we'll
have a fun
you,
night.
We'll miss you, Neil. We'll miss you.
Read some comics.
I don't know how to read. I'm illiterate.
Then just look at the pretty pictures. That they're comics, after all.
That's right.
There you go.
Night, guys. Night everybody in the chat.
Anybody, you're welcome to come on board.
Stephen John Drew.
The John Drew.
John Drew.
Stephen had an interesting time because the supervillain from Supergirl actually impacted his city earlier this week, and the rolling power outages. Yeah, that wasn't a storm. No, that was the supervillain on this week's Supergirl.
Actually, I did that to spite him. I just pulled the plug
on the whole city
outside his house. I went, and then I ran back here. I traveled across the continent just to do this.